Give yourself some love with our self-care programs at hrnradio.com.
Hi, everyone. Welcome. It's December. We welcome you to another session of Dr. Bernie's Mind Health Matters. And great to be with you, Bernie. It's wonderful to... How was your Thanksgiving?
Oh, it was good. Except, yeah. You know, I had to drive for over 2 hours to go to New Jersey.
But you didn't. You didn't drive, though.
No.
Okay. But you got driven. That's not bad.
But we got there all right. Thank
good.
God. You know, because there have been Thanksgivings when an accident has made me make a U-turn and go home, you know. It's just too many hours. But the other thing I found that was very interesting, I didn't realize it until on the way home, we have a lot of siblings, their children, you know, generations, really a full house.
Nice.
One of our sons, his house. But I sat down in the kitchen at the table that was set up, because it was a table around the house. And I noticed later that the people who sat with me were all the grandchildren. Now, they're in college and, you know, seeking careers and things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But on the way home, it suddenly occurred to me that the people I sat with and who sat with me was another generation. But I really enjoyed it. And our son said they chose to be with you. It wasn't a coincidence. Because I said it was interesting that I sat there because that's where... I picked up a plate, so I just sat down at that space.
Right.
And he said, No, they chose to be with you.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's so interesting when we can skip generations.
Well, you know, Bernie, what I find interesting about what you just said is that, you know, in so many conversations you and I have had and so many of these discussions, that so many teachers talk about being like a child again, being young, full of wonderment. And, you know, when we can return to that state of mind, that kind of consciousness of being, you know, seeing things as if it's for the first time, just like today, you know, that we had a snowstorm here in Connecticut, and I know you probably feel the same way. We're driving around, my wife and I, and we're looking at the evergreens with snow on them. It was so majestic, so beautiful. It's beyond... anything that's imaginable, how gorgeous everything looked. And that's because we stop to wonder and look at things as if it's the first time we're seeing them.
Yeah. One morning, I got up early, had to get, you know, to the hospital for an 8 o'clock. And I fixed the blinds so I can look out. And the window was completely covered with ice.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't see a damn thing. What the weather, I mean, I had no idea what was outside. I'm getting all annoyed. And then suddenly I noticed, look at that wind. It was like a work of art. You know, all the crystals, the ice, the pattern. It was like fern, let's put it that way. And suddenly I was, wow, this is gorgeous.
Yeah.
And I was no longer angry that I couldn't see
right.
the window. And mm-hmm. outside... when I went out, all the ice that was stuck on the branches, you know, I'm worrying, oh my, they'll break, they'll get... And the sun came out, and the whole area lit up. It was like somebody hung light bulbs on all the trees.
Or diamonds.
Yeah. Or diamonds.
Yeah.
And so there I was going from upset and aggravated to, wow, what a beautiful world.
Well, you know, because your eyes focused on something that is within you, you know, that beauty that's within you, it connected with that, almost like being a child. I think that when you're entertained that way, and you know, in a lot of ways, it's really like being lost in the moment and being completely immersed in now without a thought of anything else.
Yep.
You know, it's really stillness and quietness. You're quieting your mind as you've talked about so many times.
When you learn to... you know, stop and look, you might say, with different eyes and different attitudes. Then
exactly.
Change.
Then exactly.
The curse becomes a blessing instead of, what a horrible day. What's going to happen? Will I get there? Then, wow.
Well, you know, at first you looked and you couldn't see. So your focus was that of not being able to see through the window, which is an expectation, you know, that you normally do. But then your focus changed to the beauty that you saw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. And that I was able to see it. I have to give myself credit for that. You know?
Exactly.
I could have been, there are plenty of people.
You could have stayed mad, yeah.
Doesn't matter what you tell them. They,
yep.
You know.
Exactly.
Telling you, no, no, no.
Exactly.
They want to complain.
Yeah, don't you think life is basically simple, but we complicate so much of it?
Yeah. I think something I think I wrote in one of my books, give what you want. To me, when I was reading that, it was what an interesting sentence. Because I know that many of the things that trouble me are where I have given things, and now I'm mad that people don't give them back, you know, repay
mm-hmm.
me.
Mm-hmm.
But so it's what I want now. But when it said, why don't you give what
mm-hmm.
you want,
mm-hmm.
I just felt this peacefulness come over me.
I love that.
And just let me give.
Yeah. You know, I know exactly what you're saying, because when I first started to, me and my crusade for happiness. But when I first started, you know, I actually probably could classify myself as a crusader. I wanted to change the world. I wanted people to know more about happiness. There wasn't much known back when I started. But I slowly realized that it isn't that I want to change other people and give them happiness and let them see the wonder of it. But I started realizing I really can't do that. I really can't change anyone. What I can do, though, is just give. Love giving, and then it'll be up to them if they take it or don't take it or use it or whatever they do.
Yeah, you can't change anyone. That
nope.
I learned, too.
Nope.
You can present things to them, mm-hmm. and then they can make a choice.
Yeah. Well, I think if you present a good choice, that's the best you could do. Just like when you were changing the medical profession, you know, I don't know that you could say it in words, what you were talking about, but you showed it in actions. You showed it in results. People didn't have to believe what you were saying. They saw the results and the work that you were producing.
Yeah. And I just turned to that page in my 365 prescriptions book, Give What You Want.
Mm.
Khalil Gibran, you give but little when you give of your possession. It is when you give of yourself that you truly give.
Exactly.
And at the bottom it said, give what you wish to receive.
Ultimately, I think that's what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. We all need that. You know, if you want love, give love. It could be money, love, whatever.
Well, you're right. And you know what I think? I think when it comes to love, you know, because you're the master of love. I mean, back in 1986 when you wrote Love, Medicine, love, you know, there's the word. And I was a lot younger then. I didn't quite understand what you were talking about. But that word love is something that we think we need by receiving it. But the truth is what we really need to do is to give it. That's what we really are in need of, giving love.
And it's a hell of a weapon.
It sure is.
People, I mean, something I was reading in the paper, we all are, about $500 million to build a fence.
Uh-huh.
Across Mexico.
Right.
And when I read that, I suddenly thought, if Trump were Gandhi, what would he do? Because I love reading about Gandhi's life and all the things he did to those who were in trouble and difficult.
Mm-hmm.
My thought, and I sent a letter to the editor, which I don't know if any of the papers will publish, but I said,
right.
What if we said, you know, to Mexico or all the people who are trying to escape through Mexico, we have $500 million for you to make your lives better. You don't have to come here. We'll do something for you instead of building a fence. Because I really said Gandhi would probably say, all right, let me spend $500 million and make a better world for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they don't have to keep running. And instead of putting up a wall, which isn't going to change anything except, you know, more separation and more difficult.
Absolutely. You know, Bernie, what you're really talking about now is thinking in terms of possibilities.
Yeah.
You know, rather than physical things, you know, the possibilities are endless what we could do with that kind of money.
And again, when I say give what you want, if you said, I really want those people to have a better life,
mm-hmm.
okay, then give.
mm-hmm.
Don't put a wall up to keep them away. Or just let them in, you know, and spend the money here to help them.
Mm-hmm.
It would be fascinating if you came to this country undocumented and said, I'm an undocumented, you know, so can I have $50,000, please? And they say, oh, sure, yeah, here it is. We have a fund for you to help you get started. I mean, what a crazy different world it would be.
Well, I don't know that that will happen, but it's
no,
a possibility.
But, yeah, I mean, my feeling really is if somebody like Gandhi or Mother Teresa were running the show, it would happen.
You know, that is interesting how different leaders would produce different results. That's a very interesting study.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when you read that, I've got stuff, you know, by them on the kitchen table all over the place where you stop and look at it. I just picked this up on my desk, Helen Keller. Optimism is the faith that leads to achievement. Nothing can be done without hope and confidence. Helen Keller. You know, and these are all people who are troubled. You know, here she's blind and deaf. Why isn't she mad at everybody and everything? She talks about optimism.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's the kind of person she was. She's this incredible teacher. Why?
What do you think?
Around my desk.
What do you think allowed her to have the focus on the positive side of life? A person who had that many things.
That you have to have love. She had to feel good with her parents. And mm-hmm. What was the name of the...
Oh, the teacher. Her teacher.
Yeah, I keep forgetting that.
I don't recall, but yeah, you're right. She had a very good relationship with her, I believe.
But all of them, mm-hmm. you know, were there to support her and make her feel, you know, good and worthy
yeah.
and... you know, not cursed, that sort of thing. She was a teacher. I mean, every time I think of her and that she graduated from college with honors.
Amazing.
She's blind and deaf. Yeah.
It's amazing. It's inconceivable, frankly.
Yeah, and her, I mean, the message to me from her that was so potent, because at workshops I'll say, all right, tomorrow morning you have to wake up blind or deaf. Which do you want? And the majority of people, except for musicians, end up saying, oh, I want to be deaf. And her quote, I've heard of the stars or the rainbows of the light, you know, the ray of light on the waves. These I would like to see. But far more than sight, I wish for my ears to be open. The voice of a friend, the imaginations of Mozart. You know, life without these is darker by far than blindness. And that woke me up. Reading her words, because I realized how much people needed somebody to listen to them so that they really could hear themselves and know what their troubles were. And mm-hmm. that was something I learned in the office, to just sit and listen, stop telling everybody how to fix everything as soon as they tell you, you know, I got a problem. Oh, yeah,
yep.
I know what to do for that. You got to do this,
yep.
you know. And often they'd say, you're no help.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't ready for my, you know, solution. But when
right.
I listened to
right.
them, they realized what was wrong and what they needed to do. And then I was thanked, you know, for such a wonderful conversation and not being such a big help.
Yeah.
And literally there were times I said nothing. Except, And so they heard themselves and... felt it was coming from me, but it was really coming from them, and they were hearing it for the first time.
That's great.
So I always say, pay attention to those who have gone before us and overcome mm-hmm. all kinds of difficult problems.
You know, it's also interesting to me that a person like Helen Keller, despite her, you know, disabilities, not only made her way for herself in life, but in doing that, in doing it for herself, she ended up being an inspiration for everyone else.
Right.
Now that's interesting, that one person can change many lives.
Yeah, that's why the books he wrote, you know, or others helped her write
yeah.
it.
But yeah.
It came from her.
Mm-hmm.
And she was never angry at God. That's a whole other thing.
Wow.
I mean, they always get into religion. God is punishing me and... God gave me these problems,
right,
diseases,
right.
because I'm not, you know, perfect. And but she talked about it more in the sense of discipline, you know, that God may do things or present you with things, but it's to help guide you and teach you not to punish you. So
yeah.
She didn't see her afflictions as God picking on her or her parents, you know, and giving them all this trouble. It was just, what are we to do with it? What can we learn from it?
Exactly. I always felt that dealing in the right way with adversity is what leads us to wisdom. Mm-hmm. That's another path to wisdom, because you don't just get it sitting on a log doing nothing. You get it by being disturbed to the point of taking action that advances you.
Yep. I got to do one more letter to the editor, New Haven Writers.
Okay. What's that about?
On religion and rationality.
That's interesting.
Yeah, that's the title of it, by a gentleman from University of New Haven, professor of philosophy, Joel Marks. Because at the end, he said this, because this is something I always question. Where is the sentence? Because he was talking about, at the end of it, Abraham.
Uh-huh.
And here's the sentence. Didn't Abraham bind his son Isaac and lay him on the sacrificial altar to see that? To me, that looks like torture and seems irrational. See? Mm-hmm. Now, above it is this paragraph. After all, the torturer might believe in right or wrong, but believe he was doing the right thing or at least something permissible. You see? In other words, if you used religion in that sense, you know, that somebody's wrong, okay to torture them because they're sinners and so forth. But he misses the whole point of Abraham. Because, first of all, Abraham didn't end up binding his son, basically, because as he began to, the angel appeared. The other thing I also noticed when I was reading about that, because I know in my past life when I was asked to kill, I said, why don't we kill the cause of this problem rather than this person you want? And my Lord said, no, I want you to kill her. And I said, what if I don't? Then I'll kill you. So I went and killed. Now, Abraham didn't say to God, why do you want my kid? Why don't you take me, leave the kid alone? Because that's something that always disturbed me, though my own experience of faith. You know, God says, sacrifice your son. I would have said, take my life, leave the children alone.
Mm-hmm.
But he never questioned that. Also, when he's about to go off with Isaac and expects to sacrifice him, he says to his men, because this struck me too in the Bible, we will be back. You know, like, we'll be back in a few minutes. Why didn't he say, I'll be back in a few minutes, if he was going to end his son's life? And the thing I learned when I was struggling with my faith was he had faith. When God said, want to sacrifice your son, okay, we're going, he knew that the ultimate result would be for the benefit of all, and very likely that his son was not going to end up losing his life, because he had faith in his Lord. And so the angel appears, and Isaac is not sacrificed.
Mm-hmm.
Solution,
mm-hmm.
An animal. To sacrifice. And that's the part that when you have that faith, first of all, you need the right Lord. Let me say that. You don't want a Lord who goes around telling you to kill everybody and destroy everybody.
Right.
You see, because that's not really true faith. That's I'm better than you. My religion is better than your religion. Yeah, religions can cause a problem when people get screwed up with the words. But when we have faith in the Lord, then we end up doing what is good for everyone. So I've got to write a letter to the editor to say to him, he had faith. I don't think he ever expected his son to lose his life, that he really had faith that something would happen. And it did. It wasn't torture and irrational.
Now, I don't recall the exact situation, but did God actually say, don't sacrifice him, stop?
Well, an angel appears.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That, I don't remember the exact words, but the angel appears and, you know, so he stopped from doing that, and then he's provided with like a cow.
So here's what I get from that story. I get that he was asked to do something by
right.
God, and he said he will do it.
That's
he,
right.
he didn't in his mind. We don't know whether he would have or not, but he said he would do it.
Yeah, I would say he would have.
Well, let's say, but then let's look at God, and God did not ask him to sacrifice. So God just asked him to be faithful.
That's right.
And to have faith, not to kill.
Right.
So he was testing him to see how much faith he actually had.
Yeah. You know, I always say that Abraham and Jesus, me, were, you know, enormous teachings, because my crazy sense of humor was, oh, I'm, you know, nailed to a cross, so now I'm going to have some fun and show them what I'm capable of.
Right.
And I'd unplug the nails and jump down mm-hmm. and say, okay, now you people pay attention to me.
Exactly.
What I just did.
Exactly.
And again, that is Jesus said, my doing this is ultimately in the long term is going to provide wisdom and peace to the world, then he sacrificed himself for God's will because of the ultimate good that was going to come from it.
Perfect. Okay, we're going to take a break, and we will be right back to continue our discussion.
All positive natural health programs on HRNradio.com.
Welcome back, everyone.
Yeah, welcome back. By the way, if you haven't checked out Bernie's website, it's a great idea. Check it out today when you have a chance. It's BernieSiegelMD.com. That's Bernie, B-E-R-N-I-E, Siegel, S-I-E-G-E-L, MD.com. There's a lot of information available on it, books, tapes. You can, you know, a lot of people talk about wanting to meditate, finding ways to do it. Get some of those tapes and you'll be on your way, or some sort of healing meditation. Anything you need is, or even preventative. I mean, Bernie, wouldn't you think that a lot of what you write about and offer are something that people could do before they get cancer or get sick? They want to prevent the illness.
I was going to say, not just advertise it, but the CDs I made are things like getting ready if you're going to have surgery, radiation, chemotherapy. But they're also ones for just getting through the day,
mm-hmm.
you know. And mm-hmm. it's programming your mind. And when you listen to that voice, and especially when people know me and my voice, I think it makes even a bigger difference because it becomes very personal and you can relax and listen. And I know that from listening, you reprogram yourself. You create a new self. I mean, your body is altered by it.
Your cells in your body.
All those things. Yeah, your mm-hmm. expectation. Because mm-hmm. once you go through that, you're expecting good things to happen. You reprogram yourself. And, you know, people just feel so helpless so often.
You know, that's an area that's kind of misunderstood, and I love what you just said, because expecting, I call it positive expectancy. And what I consider positive expectancy is that you put it out there that you'd like this, you expect it, but with the idea that, look, if I don't get it, I don't get it. That's okay. But I have a preference, and I'm putting my, you know, I'm putting my order in, because it's almost like, how is God going to fulfill your order if you don't tell him what it is you want?
Right. Yeah, that, and consciousness, well, you know, I've told you the story about Carl Jung and the Rainmaker.
Yes.
You know,
Bernie, are you speaking into the phone? I think.
Well, I leaned forward to just...
There you are.
But,
we got you back.
All right. Also, I was thinking, and my voice gets softer when I'm thinking. But when Carl Jung was in Africa and the Rainmaker said that I separate myself from everybody because it's their consciousness that created the drought. So I meditate and it rains. And that struck me. So from then on, I was always creating my own weather. You know, well, you know, look at this weekend. You know, when people are flying everywhere, what if they all meditated on good weather?
Yes, right.
See? And there were times, even if the weather wasn't good, what happened to that flight and who the pilot was and all, you know, worked it out so I ended up getting to where I was going at the right time.
Right.
It was like the pilot and I were going together and they were holding the planes for him. And so it was just amazing to me. And mm-hmm. When I don't like what the weather is, I'll push a storm out to sea.
I agree with you.
And so if people work on their consciousness mm-hmm. and the weather, and I don't mean it out of a selfish way, but in a way of just, you know, making it pleasant and less dangerous and not iced and et cetera, et cetera. So you create your own weather. And I mm-hmm. think when you realize it goes beyond weather, that our consciousness creates our future. Again, back to Jung, his quote was, the future is unconsciously prepared long in advance, and there can be gifts by clairvoyance.
Mm-hmm.
So when you go to a fortune teller, they're reading your consciousness. See, they know where you're headed. And when you listen to these CDs, you can reprogram yourself and your consciousness because you're now visualizing what you want to occur. And you're in a calm, peaceful state. You know, there's background music. All these things, the beat of the music, everything mm-hmm. affects mm-hmm. you. You know, when you think about the athlete's heart, their heart rate can be in the 60s and 70s.
Slow down,
yeah,
steady.
Some overweight, yeah. anxious
right.
person is going to be 80, 90 or more.
Mm-hmm.
And when you hear that beat of 60 or 65 a minute, it's a calming feeling. And so the music, I'm not a musician, but I guess it was called slow Baroque music. There is that kind of pace in it. And you listen to it, and it feels good. Yeah, and I began playing it in the operating room.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how I came across it, but I think one day I probably was listening to a tape or a record or something, and I thought, boy, that's nice. I feel good. So I put it in the car, and then I would play it in the operating room. And everybody noticed, oh, we feel better after that.
Yeah.
And so they stopped worrying about me bringing in electrical appliances and, you know, different things.
Blow up the place.
Yeah, because if people feel good, then the opposition ends.
True.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah, you know, I'm glad you're bringing up the weather because I know it sounds crazy that we have the possibility of having control of something like that, but everything is consciousness. And, you know, I personally have been using that. Like you say, you could push a storm out or they kept talking about a lot of snow. We only got maybe 2 inches, you know. Why is that? Who knows? But I know one thing that I do, we've been having a Basher Brigade. We feed hundreds and hundreds of families all over Bridgeport, New Haven. And we've been doing that I've been involved with it for over 25 years. And it never rained on the Saturday before Thanksgiving where we do this. And I don't think it's a coincidence. In fact, the
right.
group says, Lionel, you're in charge of the weather for that Saturday. I go, I'm on it. And it's not a joke. I take that seriously. I think, look, it could rain, but I put my order in, and God doesn't let me down.
Yep. Absolutely.
You know, and it would be very difficult assembling all these turkeys and baskets in a ram. I mean, we do it in a warehouse, but then it's got to go into people's cars and trucks, and it would be a mess. So we're very fortunate, and I'm very grateful it's never rained, but I don't think it's a coincidence. That's what we're talking about.
It affects the weather. It affects your body. It affects everything. The physical can't be, you know, it's not really separated
right.
from you and your time.
Now, Bernie, here's one thought. I know we got to go to a break. But the one thought I have is that when you're creating and manifesting and you're controlling something like the weather for more than yourself, and you're doing it for a mass amount of people, you're doing it for the greater good of others, then it works really well.
Yeah,
is what I think. I think that's an added,
Yeah, it's
part
of selfishness.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
I keep saying I keep asking my wife, who died 2 years ago, to fix the lottery and Powerball, you know, because we have 6 birthdays. So all of those, you know, lottery-type tickets have 6 numbers. So I just tell her to work our birthdays out and put them in. And it, you know, I have. But to me, it's fun to work on that consciousness and see what happens, because I see so many examples of it. And it's not being selfish, because I keep saying to my wife, her spirit, honey, I'll start a charity, and we'll do good things for the world. You know,
perfect.
It's not about just me having a lot of money.
Yeah. Well, then it'll work. So, then it has more power.
So we'll see what happens, because if it does, I'm going to publicize it
and
tell people. Because then everybody will be conflicted.
Well, everybody will know where your house is, because there'll be a line out the door.
Everybody will be putting their numbers in, and we'll be back where we started.
Like what you hear? Tell your friends. Thanks for listening to HRNradio.com.
We are back. You're listening to Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel, and we were just talking about winning the lottery, Bernie, so you can go and help a lot of people with a lot of money. But one of the thoughts that I had was that money's a currency, and you've already been handing out a lot of currency. As a matter of fact, you haven't been handing it out. You've been flowing it out through your books, your tapes, yourself, your ECAP, exceptional cancer patients. And how many phone calls have I been on with you where we had people that were told they're going to die of cancer? And that was 30 years ago, and all kinds of different people have said that because of picking up a book, a tape, something, attending a lecture of yours, they didn't die. They didn't die. So that currency that you have put out into the world has benefited so many people. And I think handing somebody even $1 million doesn't compare to handing them the keys to their life that they took and found out that they could do something with what you gave them to work with. You know, they did it, but you provided that particular currency that they put to use and figured out how to use it and make it work and survived and beat the odds. I find that incredible. There's nothing that anybody could do that's better than that. That is incredible.
Yeah, that's a gift. If you give people money, the majority of them end up not happy. And I'm not talking about giving somebody $10 to, you know,
right,
buy something. But when you're giving a large amount, they end up with more conflict, you know, like lottery winners, because then they end up with arguments with their family. Well, you want all that money, why don't you give me some, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you help me get a new house? Why don't you this? Why don't you that? So they end up arguing with everybody. Literally, if they said, yeah, I won the lottery, I'll divide it with my family. Then, you know, if people start saying, well, how come you gave your brother $3 and you only gave me $2, you know,
right,
that's not fair.
Right.
It's just nuts. So we have to understand that money can be a problem too, unless you know what to do with it.
True.
So like I said, give what you want. If you got $5 million and you gave it away, it's no problem. And think of how many people are going to thank you for what you did for them. I mean, I know it sounds nuts, but yeah, you could keep a couple of million so you can pay your bills and help your kids pay their college tuition and help others that way. Start your own new charity. So I do give. I've had to learn. I mean, one of the lessons that I had to learn is when you give, there are people who don't pay you back even though they're telling you they will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not asking for something. They're telling you they need something, an emergency, you know, with business or their home,
right,
or something. So could I please give them some money to fix things? Mm-hmm. And then you never hear from them again. That's the part that bothers me. I don't mind not being repaid financially when people keep talking to me and we become friends. That's the part I love. You know, they become a part of my life. And it ain't whether they ever paid me back or not. And I was almost laughing for a moment because there's so many people, so many crazy things that happen that are always promising you, yeah, 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 yeah. And then something else because one friend of mine said, oh, if somebody in the family died, so I'll be getting some money and I can pay you back. And then a few weeks later, I found out I wasn't in the will.
Oh. Oh.
You know? So it. But she and I talk. We've been friends for, you know, every day since I lent her the money. And all the things she's been through and I've been through, and we help each other. But when people isolate themselves, that I just feel sad for them. That,
well, then it was only about the money.
Yeah. Mm. But, well, it's less than just about the money. It's not about people. You know what I mean? Yes, you got the money, you paid, you know, your bills, so your business didn't fail. But what about yourself as a person and the person who helped you?
Now, I have a question for you, Bernie. I'm listening to you talk about the money that you lent. I mean, it can't be thousands of people. Let's say there's a large number of people that you've done that with. Okay. But as far as I'm concerned, there are thousands thousands and thousands of people you've reached and helped, and a lot that you'll never know and never hear from, but you helped them. How does that make you feel?
Well, that's why I've learned, give what you want. Because I don't want to create problems for myself. Understand what I mean?
Yes.
When I'm bitter and resentful, then
yes,
I'm screwing myself up.
So you know what I think? I mean, you know, you don't need me to tell you anything, and I'm not. But I'm just saying, maybe you might want to consider not giving the money because that may happen, and you don't want to put yourself in a bit. Or giving the money and tell them, look, I don't want the money back. Just keep it.
Yeah, I mean, I've thought of those things. You know, if I don't want to, I say no. And I don't go to bed feeling guilty.
And well, you're the one who taught us to say
because
no.
I've learned to stop, yeah, you know, making my life more difficult.
Yeah, I don't.
You heard me tell the story about when a hotel room was robbed.
Yeah, I have.
Know? And well, it was you know, back at this time of year.
Right.
Somebody got into our room with a key. They didn't break in, so I know it was an inside job in the hotel. Somebody knew what was in our room. And, you know, went in, took things. I had seen this man standing in the hallway, which I thought was really weird in a hotel, that people stand in a hallway. But anyway, so when we got back after our meal, the place was, you know, robbed. And I was resentful and bitter. You know, if I were there, I would get him. But then when Christmas came, I don't know where it came from, but thank God it came, I suddenly had this image of him bringing wonderful gifts for his children.
Absolutely.
Because of what he stole from us and was able to, you know, pawn it and so forth.
Absolutely.
And then I had a big smile on my face over what we had done, you know. So his robbing us was a wonderful thing. Now his kids.
Well, you refocused. You refocused and it worked. So we're going to take one more break and we will be right back.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Listening to Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel, and I'm Lionel Ketchian, and it's good to be here. Bernie, we were talking about things as we left, and one thought I had that I don't know who said it, but the quote was, you don't have to set yourself on fire just because somebody's cold. So, you know, there's a lot of need out there. There are a lot of people that may want things or need things and whatever difference that may be. But we don't, like you say, we could say no. We don't always have to do something to ease our conscience, let's say. We can do what we think is right.
I'm always telling you, being submissive is not a survivor personality. See, in the immune-competent personality profile by a psychiatrist, then, one of the questions he would ask is, if you're asked to do a favor for a friend and you don't want to do it, what do you tell them?
You should say no.
Yeah, that's the proper answer. Mm-hmm. I always bring that up to every nurse I know because 90% of nurses
say yes.
I'll do it. I'll do it. They're neglecting themselves.
Right.
So think about it. You know, if it's really not something your heart wants to do, say no. You can say, I'm sorry, I can't, or, you know.
Well, you know why? There's more to it than the survival personality. The other part is when you give from your heart, then you're doing yourself a favor.
Yeah.
The other way, you're robbing yourself.
Yeah, there was another article in the paper the other day. A gratitude is good for your health.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, if you give to somebody and and they feel gratitude towards you and you feel it towards them, you're both benefiting from the transfer, whatever that was.
You know, what you were talking about earlier with the money, you know, lending people, reminds me of a simple thing like walking into a building and opening the door for someone, and they walk right through the door, and they don't even acknowledge you, they don't thank you, nothing. And then you say to yourself, what did I do that for?
No, I love doing that, and, you know, smiling at people and saying nice things to them, especially when I get on elevators. You got a trapped audience. And then I act crazy, and there's no escape for them because, you know, the door's shut.
Yeah, but what about a door? Like, you open a door for someone, and they don't acknowledge you, they don't thank you.
Yeah, but, listen, what I did, I was at a medical meeting, you know, so the hotel's filled with doctors. I get on the elevator, you know, good morning, how you doing? Nobody answered. I said, oh, you're all doctors. And I said, I knew that because nobody said anything or
right,
anything. You know,
right.
Then they smiled, and we start talking. But it was so true. You know, they're all in their own heads. Thinking and not feeling, not acknowledging other people and so forth. So I'm all into, you know, complimenting. And my wife is so good at it. She's always telling everybody how beautiful they look, how lovely outfit they had on. And, you know, these are total strangers you meet. And everybody is so happy and smiling, and she becomes their friend. But one of my favorites, just remembered, because I would prepare my wife for it, I have a foreign language I created. You know, like saying to you, Yachatushta Balamaluma Atasha. See? And I would say things to my wife like that. And everybody in the elevator always was sure my fly is open, you know, or what's wrong with my clothing. They all start looking at themselves. Because my wife would burst out laughing because I'm being such a nutcase. And they were sure it was something funny. You know? Otherwise, why would she be laughing?
Right,
and,
right.
A lot of times I never told them, my wife, that, you know, that it was a joke. We were just kidding. And, yeah, because it was just so much fun to get off the elevator and leave them wondering, what the hell is he talking about?
Well, you know, you are a prankster, and I think that's a beautiful thing because it brings you back to being like a kid.
That's just what I was going to say. I always tell people, keep the kid in you alive. You know, that gets you through things. That everything doesn't look so terrible when you're a kid.
And when you can laugh at yourself, that's the greatest thing of all because we take ourselves too seriously.
Yeah. Yeah, if you laugh, it takes away all the pain.
Mm-hmm. You know, you said it many, many times. It's when you do things for others, and even a person with cancer, boy, when they start thinking about other people, I bet you that's the road to recovery.
Yeah. Oh, I know many who have recovered when they started helping others. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, people have to realize it's a physical change in your body.
And chemistry.
This study was done. Volunteers live longer, healthier lives than the general population.
Mm-hmm.
So you're helping others. You're changing yourself. And it's about, again, relationships and why women live longer than men with the same diseases. You see, and what drives me nuts is when you read medical articles, because this doctor was writing about melanomas and, you know, survival and how the women have a better survival rate than the men. And then he wrote, it must be the hormones, you know, that are protecting the women. See?
Right.
And that's where doctors get so stupid. See, my comment to him is, married men live longer than single men with melanomas. So sleeping with hormones is protecting them. You know, he's got to realize it's about relationships.
Yeah.
That's what's keeping the women alive. Mm-hmm. Their hormones might affect how they relate to others, and they do, because when we pet a dog, our bonding hormones go up.
Right.
Just as when a woman gives birth. So, our actions change our chemistry, and the guys are busy doing things. I don't know, did I mention to you the headstones in
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, in Woodbridge here.
Yes, yes, you have.
A guy,
yes,
mm-hmm. You know, they talk about what a wonderful man, terrific career, mm-hmm. and then it gives his year of retirement, and he's dead within another year. And his wife, she doesn't
nothing.
Have a damn thing on
right,
her stone,
right.
saying, what a wonderful lady, look at all things. And she outlives him by 10 or 15 years, and there's nothing special on her headstone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
but, you know, the men, has been said in my office many times. I can't work. What's the point of living?
It's true.
And the family is sitting in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I raise my hand and I point to the right and say, look, isn't that a reason? And some of the guys, it looked like I hit them in the head with a mallet. Like, oh, people. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I'm working harder now that I'm retired for the past few years, and I work pretty hard when I work. But now that I'm not working, I really think I work harder. And
yes, don't call it work.
No, but I was just going to say that. But I used to work so I could play. Now my play is work.
Well, let me quote. I found this line from Joseph Campbell very significant. Don't ever retire. You engage. And you disengage.
Yeah.
And that made a lot of sense. You don't want to do some things, stop. You want to do other things, do them. And you're doing what feels right. And the other wonderful quote from our son, Jeffrey, life sucks, most people suck. And if you wake up one day and the world's beautiful and everyone loves one another, you're dead.
Yeah.
So, you know, figure that one out.
Either that or you found yourself in a happiness club. That's
right.
What I was
yeah. There are ways to bring heaven to earth.
Yeah. I think my work is really humanity. I love, you know, just like you, I love doing something for others. I mean, it ultimately is a selfish act because I love myself better for doing it.
Much as I often don't want to be on all these programs, you know, in terms of time and schedule, when I'm done, I feel better.
Yeah, yeah.
So I show up again next
week. Thank you, Bernie. Thank you for everything you've done for all of us.